Hello and welcome to episode 115 of Fully Boosted. I'm Brad, and with me today is Matt. Grant is in the process of moving, and Pete is also kind of moving in that his job has him going from state to state. So joining Matt and I, from just south of myself and way south of Matt, we have Donnie Gallitz and Mr. Michael Stone. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing well, thank you.
Doing good.
I'm also Brad.
Okay, Matt, I did say you were here, but good to know that you are definitely here.
I'm Brad.
Or you're me now. So we all wanted to get together tonight to talk about two fantastic events, one of which is WTC, which Donnie and Matt were at, and then the Boca Brawl, which all of us but Donnie were at, which I think, I mean, I wasn't there, but I would say is probably better than WTC. Matt, would you agree with that?
No.
Okay, well, it's close.
No.
Well, in which case, then, can you tell me about WTC? How was it, boys?
So I've been to WTC twice, and it feels like I've been going my entire life. It's really the best event of the year. There's nothing even close. So for those of you who don't know, WTC is the World Team Championship of War Machine and Hordes. There are 64 teams from varying countries, usually two teams per country. About 10 or 11 countries have three teams. The third teams are determined by ranking in the last year, population demographics, and so on. It is a team tournament, five-man teams, and I was a member last year of Team Canada Polar Bear. It was me, Bubba Dalton, Chris Dancox, Charles Soong, and Corey Doyle.
To clarify, when he says last year, he means 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. Sorry. It's already in the past.
moving on.
It's. I'm already looking forward to 2020, man. It's WTC is one of those things that I plan my entire year around. It's the best. For those that... So the schedule of WTC is actually what makes it the best event. You'll see everyone comes in about Friday night. Friday during the day, you'll see everyone from the varying countries come in. And then Friday night, you have grudge matches. So every year, America and Canada play for three bottles of whiskey each.
USA. USA.
Sadly, USA did not win. I got to carry home six bottles of whiskey. Well, I shouldn't say carry home. Carry to day two, six bottles of whiskey. But that's Friday night. It's just drinking, having fun, you know, trying to settle your nerves for Saturday, where you play three rounds of War Machine. You play a round, have a lunch break, then play two more rounds. And then Sunday, it's the same thing. You play a round, have a lunch break, then play two more rounds. So you play six total games of War Machine in over the course of a weekend, and it is super relaxed and really fun.
Donnie, what's the schedule like for the Solo Masters?
So it's a little different, and this was my first time attending a WTC event, and I can concur that, you know, there's nothing quite like it. Just the whole international flavor. You know, there's a lot of tournaments you can go to. We're like say our meta travels pretty well. Say we travel up to Philly, and I'm so happy that I might play like four people not in my meta, right, during the course of the tournament if I'm lucky. You know, you can guarantee yourself to be playing people that you've just never, might not even get a chance to play ever again, right? So that experience in itself is pretty unique. People are just completely friendly. You know, you have a love of this game in common with everybody. It's a chance to put faces to names of people you've been chatting with online for, you know, over a year or something like that. So it was definitely quite the experience. The Solo Masters is a little bit different in that it's also done over 2 days. And I think this time there was a little bit, they capped the event at 32 players. And this year I think there was only 29. So we had five rounds, and it was three the first day and two the second day.
So the big thing with WTC is that it changes its location every year. Last year it was in 2018 it was in Poland, and 2019 this year was in Belgium. And I know Donnie and myself both came in like about a week early. And we got I got an Airbnb for my team and a few other people. 8 sweaty dudes staying in an Airbnb in Belgium, in Brussels. And we explored, ate a lot of waffles, had that real team bonding experience. So there's something to be said for team events, like the camaraderie and all that stuff it breeds. But when you travel to another country and you spend a week drinking and eating and like living together and then go play in the event, even if your team loses a game or someone catches a bad break, the like friendship and camaraderie you built off of that just holds you together so much better.
Yeah, I do want to give Matt a thank you, by the way. The reason I went out to WTC, I was the alternate for USA Team North, and I beat my entire team out to Belgium. I was first one there, and so I was just randomly sitting in a restaurant in Brussels, and Matt texted me. He goes, "You here?" I said, "Yeah, I'm here." He goes, "Where are you?" And I just said, I told him the name of the restaurant. He goes, "I know where that is." And like literally 10 minutes later, him and Bubba came in and just kind of hung out. I said, "Hey, you know, come hang with us until your teammates and stuff get in." So that was cool. They kind of adopted me for a day.
What a good guy, Matt.
I mean, I'm been accused of many things. Being a good guy is a long stretch.
What a good guy. How was the restaurant?
Oh, I mean, it was good. I mean, I was sitting there stuffing my face with mussels, I believe. So, you know, you can't go wrong there.
So,
go ahead.
No, I was saying over these couple days, we said the grudge match occurred. Did both of you play in the grudge match?
I did.
I played in the grudge match. I wouldn't call what Donnie did playing.
So let me explain about this.
Uh-oh.
So a little bit, just a little pre-WTC, I got kind of half invited by Danny to go over to what's called the English Villa before the event. And that was basically just a madhouse of just games and stuff going on. And so when I arrived there, I had been talking to JVM about, you know, hey, how do we play into Resheth? How do we play into Gareth too? And Jake Mado, I think, is actually a really sweet Fianna 2 list. And I got a chance to play into Resheth being run by Ryan on England Lions. It's like my first match at the Villa. And there was a nice house that I could kind of boomerang around off of. It's got a couple Hellions in it, which allow me to do Wind Ravager, which can really cut down on the number of things that Resheth list can do when they can't fire their guns. So it's kind of like lets you position and jam, and I was able to get a pretty sweet scenario win playing against Ryan. So I had kind of conveyed that to my team for our Team USA that, you know, hey, I think this list can play into Resheth. You know, it's not an ideal. It's not what Legion's looking for. It's, in fact, the last thing they're actually looking for. But before the grudge match, I had gotten picked up by this Danish team, the Ugly Ducklings, that they wanted to get some matches in. So I was pulled into a 5-on-5 against those guys. And as I was trying to finish up my match, I was having a really sweet game against a Gaspy 1 Brass Ferret caster. They had already started the pairing process of the grudge match against Canada. So it's basically like, they said, oh, no, you've got time. You can finish your games. Go ahead, Donnie. It's not a big deal. So we wound up playing this really sweet game where the clock got to under a minute for both of us. So as you can tell, it's taking as long as it possibly could for me to get up to the grudge match. When I show up to the grudge match, I find out that I'm going to be playing Bubba, who's playing Resheth. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. This is like the least matchup that they want to put me in. But I said, I've just played this matchup. It feels good. I think I know what I can do. I could probably frustrate Bubba. It'll be good. And then they said, we picked tables. And I was like, oh, great, we picked tables. So I'm obviously going to come up there. There's going to be houses and forests everywhere that I can hide all my stuff behind. And I show up, and the table that I'm on is literally got a big smoke cloud in the middle, what the WTC decided to call rough terrain everywhere, which doesn't provide cover. It's literally you just need Pathfinder to go through it. And then one other smoke cloud. So, okay. So we're playing Recon 2. We're chasing the Ejecta for Isle of Sight. Resheth has two of those extollers that lets you have Isle of Sight. So basically, I was playing my list into an open field. And that's an entirely different experience than when you've got houses and forests to jump around behind with all your flying beasts against their large bases. So needless to say, it did not go well. Bubba was kind of like at the end going, how does Jake think this list ever beats for Chef? And I was just like, well, I can't really show him on this table. But
so all of that to say, Bubba consumed your soul.
It did.
My match in that grudge match, I was playing right next to you, actually. Mm. And I was my opponent was playing against Infernals for the first
time. Yeah, actually, I think I wore your hat. So
yeah, you wore my hat all that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching your game because my opponent was busy not understanding that long shadows was a rule. So that was fun. So not to go over that game much, but my opponent walked up, feated with Risheth, walked up his mammoth, went to go shoot my heavy, and then I asked him what the range of his gun was, and then he ended his turn.
Oh, that's rough.
Oh, I guess he put up counterblast, so you know there's that. So, but yeah, WTC is a really fun event. If you haven't been, I would highly recommend at least trying out Solo Masters 1 year. Donnie went for it this year. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, I mean it was a great experience. I mean I don't necessarily want to go round by round unless that's something you guys want to do.
No,
but
no,
the
no.
main okay. So the main thing is though, I show up after having just gotten completely wasted by Bubba the night before, and I look to see my first pairing and it's Scorn. And I'm like, oh my God, I flew 3,000 miles and I'm about to lose in the first round of Solo Masters. Luckily for me, it wasn't Risheth and it worked out really well. But the point was, is like, I don't think that I had ever felt like such anxiety before a match as that very first one. Because I was like, you know what, this is just going to be absolutely none of the goals that I set for myself if I go and lose in this first round. But it worked out really well. I wound up losing in the second round. So I was like, okay, well, there's that. But the guy that beat me won the whole thing with Crix, Brad. You should be happy about that.
I'm very happy.
So, and I followed him up towards the podium by winning the rest of my matches.
So, with Donnie saying that thing about Soul Masters is losing round one, that is 100% reciprocated in the team event. Holy shit. Like, last year, I did not have any like pressure on me to perform. I was like, our team's going to do how it does. I'm going to do the best I can. This year I was like, all right guys, we're aiming to win it this year. And like the amount of pressure on ourselves was intense that first round. Like when they put up matchmaking and we got Sweden and we were like, ah, Jesus Christ. And then it was rough, man. Oh, that first round, losing first round is rough. We didn't lose first round, but holy moly.
Yeah, I don't know how to equate it. I mean, I was playing in the finals of East Coast Rumble in the Masters a few years back, and the intensity of that match was intense, but it was also at the end of like seven rounds of War Machine, so you're kind of like a little bit worn out. Also, this first match, I had probably more anxiety, more I guess nerves and intense focus than I did in that, and it was the first round of a match of a tournament, so. That was an unusual experience in itself.
Yeah. One of the things that happens at WTC is right when you get home, you'll get 50 friend requests from various people you met over the weekend all around the world. In my case, I had, I don't know, five or six people come up to me and be like, hey, you're Matt McMatt, right? And I'm like, that's me. And they're like, I listen to you on the internet. And I'm like, oh, that's a mistake. And then
yeah, they would...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, just concur with that. So I guess what's fun is the War Machine is fun. It's actually, it's intense. It's great. It's really high level. It's clean for the most part. Matt can talk about matches against Pigeons if he wants. But my whole point on that is it's the non-War Machine stuff that really makes it unique and totally great. But like after the first night, just hanging out with, like I got to meet a bunch of guys from Team Scotland on my trip there with my wife to Scotland for a vacation. We wound up in the middle of my vacation. I played a steamroller, which is really geeky, but it was awesome. And I met all those guys that played for WTC Scotland. And so I got to hang out with them the first night that we were there. And the last night, I guess, afterwards, all the jersey swapping. I'll let Matt talk about his portion. But, you know, I came with two USA jerseys, totally intent on trading one. And wound up trading them both. I figured I'll just have to order another one. But that is just fun, you know, having having stuff from other countries is awesome, and drinking and sharing all those good times was quite the treat. That's the part that you can't really experience in any of the other cons.
It did seem from the outside looking in, Donnie, that you were leading the party.
So I lost this really good bottle of liquor in the grudge match to Canada, and then Canada brought the liquor bottle back downstairs with him on the last night, and so let's open this thing. At that point, I figured everybody needed to have some American whiskey, right? So I went and found little Dixie cups behind the bar, and we had like a big old toast. So that was good times.
Yeah, WTC is the best event of every year. It's like the War Machine is secondary to the hanging out. And, you know, I it's just the best. It's every WTC, it recharges me, and I love the game even more, and I love the community even more. And then, like, directly after WTC, I get to the super big blues because the next WTC is so far away. You know, the other thing that I guess the last thing I really want to talk about at WTC was sportsmanship and like international language and shit like that. War Machine is played in English internationally in terms of like at the WTC. And this has never been an issue in any game I've played except for against one team. And I legit had never encountered this at any table in any War Machine event I've ever been to. But holy moly, we played a team of cheaters, and it was the most savage round. I shouldn't say a team of cheaters. So two of the guys on their team were apparently really sweet dudes who just played really clean games and were, like, great. The other three were fucking monsters and just, like, cheated like their lives depended on it. And, like, we had, like, before the game, we got a warning, and then, like, that they're going to cheat and, like, we should watch out for them. In the middle of my turn two, my opponent threw his feet token down on the table and then was like, I feeded in the middle of my fucking turn. And I was like, no, you can't just do that. And he's like, no, I'm doing it. It's fine. And I was like, no, you don't fucking try to cheat me. And he's like, oh, no, it's fine. Don't worry. I feeded. I'm like, dude, get your fucking token off my table. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, oh, anyways. So this was our round four, and it was fucking rough, man.
I mean, oof. I would have let him do it.
I mean, I killed Harvey anyways, so it's fine. But holy moly, it's like, it was rough.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I think I got to actually watch some of that match because I had finished my, so what I was doing after I was finishing my rounds at the Solo Masters games, it's one game. It goes quicker than the team events. And so actually, you know, I'd say, you know, who do you guys want to see? And Brad would actually message me five names. And I'd go around and find them and take pictures of how their games are going and stuff like that. Well, one of these things ventured me over to this match that Matt's talking about. And I got to watch one of his teammates just, I don't know how I have. So one of the people I got to meet this weekend was Corey Doyle. I hadn't met Corey before. Great guy. Really got along with him well. And I watched him find patience that I didn't know a human could find. Cause you know, he's a redhead. He's fiery, to begin with, but you know, if it had been me, my stack would have been blown so far that I wouldn't be able to contain myself, but I was really, really impressed with how he kind of kept it together. And, it was that same match. So, but anyways, that was my observation of that particular match.
To go over what Donnie was talking about, how he would take photos, for us back home to get updates on matches. During one of the rounds, I think it was round six, maybe round five, but I think it was round six, where we're asking for updates on matches, and Donnie's just sending photos of his lunch back to us. It's like sending photos of ribs, like, during, like, in the middle of the meal. Like, how the things are, it's like, I don't know, but these are delicious. Just for about 30 minutes. So that was torturous.
Yeah, I definitely decided to get in the dining hall early while everybody else was still playing for that particular time, so. They got updates on the mashed potatoes and the ribs instead of, like, your guys' games.
So just to cap this off, WTC, even through that, like, contentious round, was an absolute blast. And I thoroughly enjoyed every game I played, except for one of them.
So, go ahead, Matt. I was getting ready to go to the next topic. I'm sorry. I thought you were.
I would do one last thought about the Solo Masters. I think it's an experience worth doing if you've never done it before. I don't know if I would have done it if I wasn't an alternate for one of the teams. But it's just completely awesome experience. And you do finish that going, oh my God, I got to get on one of these teams. And it's, as all of us can attest, except for Matt, it's real hard to get on a team in America. You know, it's a combination of there's a entrenched group of people that have kind of got those spots. And the ATC tournament is one of the ways to qualify if your team wins that. And I think that's a really incredibly difficult five-man team event as well. Lots of competition in that. You know, and then the United States is a really big meta. There's a lot of players if you count them up, you know, across the country. And it's fierce competition to try to get just so many slots. But I really felt like going and having that international experience is another way to kind of, you have to be able to kind of promote yourself a bit so that, you know, maybe one of the captains the next year is going to take a look at you and pick you up.
Yeah, I luckily Canada is pretty good about getting new players in and keeping people who aren't practicing and aren't motivated to play off their teams. You know, we all can't prioritize War Machine as the number one things in our lives, and it's important that we understand it when it's time to take a step back and, you know, just be honest with ourselves and with our potential teammates that you need to kind of take a step back and not be a giant piece of shit and hold everyone else back. You know, just be there for your team rather than take advantage of them. And I think I'm not saying that like USA has that problem. I'm saying that classically throughout the years, every team has always had a player or two that definitely shouldn't have been on a WTC team over someone new and hungry to succeed and has room to practice, right?
Yeah. So I know there's a handful of players kind of internationally that will look over the stats from WTC and try to assert or get some feeling of what the strongest things were there. And while I don't want to necessarily go into that, my question is more one of opinion for at least you, Donnie, and you, Matt, as well. Are there lists that are going to come out from WTC that you think are going to start having a foothold in the meta for individual like solo events? And then as an additional question for that, just to give you more room to wander, if there is not one specific list you can see or even a couple lists you can see, do you see a meta shift to try to answer what was played at WTC if the things that are being played were already played? I'll let you guys run.
So I'll go real quick first because I'm sure Matt has more to add on this subject than I do, but I will observe, Matt, you were the only Infernals player, right?
That's right. Me. I'm your boy.
Yeah. So there was an Infernals player in the solo matches as well. I actually ran into him in round three. And had I not played Matt at Nova Open in practice games and in the Nova Open itself, it would have been pretty difficult. And I remember some sage advice he said to me, and this is going to sound like so cocky, and I'm totally not sucking Matt off, but he's like, hey, when you play someone else, it's not going to be me playing them. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Like, it was definitely an easier match because it wasn't necessarily Matt playing them. But I think Infernals is going to explode into the meta as those models now become more available. I think that you had a lot of people that, and I've seen this from guys I met from, like, Robin from Sweden, Tomas from Poland. All these guys have been grinding certain lists for a long time now. And it's like the WTC is like, that's the culmination. When that happens, it's like, okay, I'm finally free to go explore other things now. So I think you're going to see a lot of people switching into different factions. I think you're going to see a lot of innovation happen now that maybe wasn't happening before WTC. And I think that, you know, random people might start playing Magic too. You never know. So like the whole point of it is I think that the end of WTC starts like the new enlightenment period where people start trying to come up with new technology, new lists, new ways to push things. And Matt, you can correct me if any of that sounded wrong.
So I agree in general. I think that for WTC players or players that are focused on succeeding at WTC. So I just want to clarify this. Not every WTC player is the best player in their country or the top 15 player in their country or whatever. Not every WTC player is the same in terms of their goals, ambitions, practice, play, whatever. And I feel like there's awkward segue, but I feel like there's this notion in the community that because you're a WTC player, you know better, or you are more informed, or you're smarter or better at the game than anyone else. And that can't be further from the fucking truth. I would say there's probably 25, 30, maybe 40 players at WTC that are at the top of their game, at the top of the meta, and are like really on the ball. And then the rest are good players. There's like a, but they're like in anything, there's a bell curve of player skill involved. All that to say that just because something's popular at WTC, doesn't mean that it's going to be popular afterwards. And a lot of what WTC prep is covering your bases and playing safe. You don't take risky, innovative lists to WTC, unless they were innovated way earlier in the year and you had time to test them. So for me and people I know, WTC being over with is like the release on the pressure valve where all the creative juices can start flowing.
Right. So then going back to my question, what is the creative juice? What is coming up? What should people look to see, or what should people look to start practicing, or what has you guys excited if nothing else?
So just three quick points about what excites me. We have seen, the first point is we have basically seen no Oblivion lists yet. We're seeing like the WTC will like the shadows of the previous meta and some like foreshadowing of the stuff to come. But I think the stuff that's most exciting to me are things that have not been played yet. Looking at like Minions and Trollbloods and Signar and those factions that people haven't been paying a lot of attention to lately. Got some pretty massive overhauls in how themes work and like archons and so on. And I think the biggest changes we're going to see and the biggest things to come, I guess, would be based on how people succeed with the factions that people aren't familiar with playing against anymore. Like, can any of you honestly say that you are 100% familiar with how Trollbloods work?
I've got a good idea.
The dojo has a handful of troll players, but I don't get to see all of the casters. So 100%? No. But a solid grasp, I'd say yeah.
Yeah, I played trolls for 2.5 years, so that's the only reason I can say that. But I definitely think that one of the reasons that I'm looking, probably going to start concentrating really heavily on Grimkin now and moving away from Legion, is because I've played almost 2 years of Kalos 1, and I really still think that's an integral part to that Legion pairing, and I'm just going to shoot myself in the head if I keep playing it. So that's kind of what's going on there.
Okay.
Please don't
play Kalos 1, or don't shoot yourself in the head.
Maybe Michael's still
here. Both. Yes.
I missed you. You were so quiet.
Well, we haven't gotten to the important American event.
Well, he was respecting his elders.
Yeah. Oh. My father never told me I could speak. He was too busy talking about WTC.
Do you know why Donnie's Mike Stone's dad there, Matt?
No, I don't know the story. Tell me.
So I'll rehash this one for us real quick. We went to ATC last year, and the Sunday of ATC, the event's done. A lot of people have flights out either Sunday night, some Monday morning, whatever the time frame is, right? So we all want to get together and go out to dinner. So we grab a couple Ubers. We head across town to this place that's like right on the river there in beautiful Milwaukee, to this
Lakefront Brewery.
To the Lakefront Brewery. So we go to get there, and Mike Stone and whoever else was in his car get there first. And it's a brewery first, restaurant second, kind of the way the place is set up. So as soon as you walk in the door, they start checking IDs. For those that don't know, Baby Mike has the name Baby Mike because he's only 20. So he goes in through the front door, they check his ID, and they tell him to scram. So like everyone else from the car gets inside, he's standing outside the front door looking dejected. Our car gets there, it's like myself, Donnie, Danny, I forget who else is in it, doesn't truly matter. So we get there, Donnie throws this look on where he's both a little upset and also knows what he has to do. So he grabs Mike Stone, tells him to not say anything. They walk back in through the front door. Donnie hands him his ID, the guy checking, I mean, and in the same breath says, "Oh, this is my son." And they say nothing. They write an X on his hands. We all go in and sit down. Donnie lets out a nice deep sigh and says, "That's the oldest I have ever felt." And that's it. That's how Donnie adopted Mike Stone and also aged Donnie into oblivion.
Yeah. And also get that place's liquor license revoked.
I mean, Mike Stone didn't drink. He just got a seat.
I didn't let my son drink. You know, he does a lot of in there with adult supervision.
So. All right.
But yeah, that's the first time I really felt my age. So yeah, good times. So,
you're welcome.
I think to answer the question, things we expect to come out from WTC after the fact, infernals are going to be a thing, and then people trying wacky post-Oblivion lists that are tough to predict. Is that correct, guys?
I think in general, infernals are going to pick up a lot of steam. I agree with that. I think that the post-Oblivion cornucopia of choices is going to be really open. Like, as we saw spoiled today, the Thamrite Advocate and her entropic force, Fel Curse, and like all these different options that are going to be open up to factions. Like, why does she work for Circle? Why does Circle just have a solo that can walk and do Fel Curse? Like, all of these things that exist now open up a lot of doors that weren't open before. And I know a lot of people have been like, "Oh, I wish WTC had more innovative lists and stuff like that." If you want to see innovation, it's time for you to do it. Innovation's really risky and takes a lot of time and effort. There's a reason that competitive players don't do it right before major events. So if you want to see something new, cool, and interesting, and you want to find out if something is good, powerful, broken, OP, garbage, whatever, play the games yourself. Figure it out. What was considered shit yesterday is considered OP the next day once you win something.
Yeah, I think that's pretty spot on. All right, I think we're ready to move on, boys. Any last points from WTC? Take that as a resounding no. So, a week after, immediately after, or I guess really only 5 days after, the Boca Brawl took place here in fabulous North Jersey. Donnie was with his family in Europe, so he did not join us there. But they held a solo event on Friday where both events hit the cap of 32 players. So there was a solo event that would qualify you for Iron Gauntlet and was a Warfare Weekend qualifier. And then they had it's tough to say more casual because they were still a five-round solo tournament, but a solo event where you were competing for, like, this pile of prizes. In terms of, like, War Machine conventions, the prize pool is usually some trophies for the people that finish top three, and then they'll have, like, Iron Arena stuff. This convention puts other conventions to shame in the amount of prizes that they get together for the Boca Brawl. And that is no slight to other events. I'm just saying that the prize table was almost spilling over for the Boca Brawl.
I'm going to jump in real quick because I'm not going to have a whole lot to add during this entire Boca experience, except for that I went last year and I played in that. It's basically called the Big Base Brawl event where it's nothing. I think I came home with over $450 in product. Just from making achievements and how I finished in that tournament. So it's absolutely insane how you can do in that. But I'll be quiet now.
Well, to Donnie's point, he was saying it's from achievements. Like a lot of other conventions, you get points from playing in events or playing pickup games in the hall for Iron Arena points. That doesn't necessarily exist in the Boca Brawl. What you get is you play in the events, and they on the back of your steamroller sheet of your pairing, they have a bounty system. For things that are incredibly tough to do to things that are very easy to do. And those will then get you things after each round. So as the event goes on, you just start getting things. Also, because the event's called the Boker Brawl, there's a thing that a Bokor, if you take an Ogryn Bokor, can win you each round. So there's four different tiers. The first one is that the Bokor dies during the course of your game. The second one is that it survives during the course of the game. I think the third one is that it successfully passes a tough roll when shield guard or something, and the last one, which is just about impossible, is that the Ogryn Bokor assassinates your opponent's caster. Which if you can get that, you get like the top prizes. You can pick basically whatever you want off the table. So it's a really cool way of doing prizes and makes it so that, like, someone that goes there can't just go to Iron Arena, grind out, like, six real quick games in Iron Arena, just getting themselves killed or playing very quick games and walking away with the top stuff. Like, you have to play in the events and, you know, try to do some difficult things with your opponent in order to do it. So that's a cool way of doing it. So the solo event took place on Friday. Both myself and Mike Stone were in the Warfare Recon qualifier. Matt, I don't think you came down until the team event on Saturday. Is that right?
We arrived Saturday, Friday night.
Okay. Yeah, so just Mike and I in the solo event, and then a handful of others between that and the big base brawl. So, Mike, how was your Warfare Weekend qualifier?
It was a blast. I got to play so many individuals I never played before. No, that's a joke.
Yeah, you're going through the politics. Mike kicked ass, and he qualified for Warfare Weekend.
And the joke is I played no one new. I played only people I play at every single event I go to, because I'm just cursed now.
Yes.
But it also happens, turns out when we're half the field, because we're apparently just like a spreading disease.
Danny is a cancer. Or at least the Molly Whoppers are.
Yeah, I was going to say, Danny wasn't even there. It's just us.
Yeah, so...
we're the disease.
You were on Iona and Kruger too, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Did you play both lists through the course of the event?
I did, which is a new thing to say about me. So, just quick run through. I'm not going to go in depth because some of the... there was recordings and just updates overall. Round one, I get Justin Dew, who is a local. We play Harvey Kruger, and honestly, I go into it expecting it to lose because my record up until then into Justin was 0-X, however many times I've played him at events. And eventually, I pull that one out. Round two, I get you, Brad.
Hello.
And we play Scar 1 Iona. And
but I'm Brad.
Oh, well, man. Get ready, Matt. Here, you don't win this game.
Yeah. So
no, but
the course of
actually, I'd like to know, maybe Michael. You said that you'd never beaten Justin before.
Yes.
So when you beat him, did you kind of feel like this could be your day? At that, like, did you already know then, or were you just like, oh, that was lucky. Let's just go the next round.
How'd you feel? I mean, I felt like I had high hopes after that round.
Sure.
But honestly, it was one of those, like, if I lose the next four games, I've at least achieved something.
So when you saw that Brad was your next opponent, can you give us a little history on your matches against Brad?
Okay, so leading up to the event, I was 1-6. It's 6-1 into
six
Brad.
6-1 backwards, right?
Yeah. The one win being at Gibbs' house. In a pickup game, and usually like has some weird dice occurrence, like Venithrax failing to kill a stalker,
a warp wolf stalker.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, just misses all of his attacks, and the ones he does hit, like take nothing.
Now that one win that Brad got, was that a major victory or a minor victory?
Both.
Okay.
That's both major and minor.
All right, but in tournaments, he has never cracked.
I can't beat this kid.
He can't. So it basically comes down to, like, we're pretty even on attrition and scenario. And then he, like, goes in to kill the Storm Raptor, which I didn't run the odds, but it felt fairly good for him. And he leaves it on two boxes with a zero camp Scar just standing right in front of him. So that's kind of just how the game ended.
And that's all she wrote.
Round three, I get Mark Mail, who is on my team for the next day. And we play Iona and Maylock. And this was a game recorded by Not Safe Gaming, which was really cool to see them out and recording. So it'll
love
be nice
sororities
to see those games. They're the best. Pete is the best.
No. Trish is the best. Pete comes in at number two.
Ooh, good point. That is a valid point, Matt. I'm glad you're here to prove me wrong.
Yep.
So we just kind of just punch each other for 7 turns, as Maelok games tend to go. And I pull that one out. Round 4, I get Trish Ceretti. I get threatened to get grounded after this game, because I do pull that out after the Butcher 3 Iona game.
Wow, how much did Matt just save your life there? Like, you almost didn't acknowledge the best Ceretti, and then you played her the next round. So, okay, just go on.
That's a good point. Yeah, Matt saved me. He probably saved me from, like, just being grounded forever. So, I appreciate that. So we play Butcher 3 Iona. At one point, I'm feeling really good until, like, Butcher walks up the board and kills, like, 5 Ravagers, and then I'm like, oh, this doesn't feel good anymore. But eventually, she's forced into a situation where I can kill her. And then round 5 is me and Andrew Cutter, who have played at every event since Captain Con. So it was fun to finally get my game into him. It was a really close game that came down to turn 7, and we played Heretic and Kruger 2.
Yeah, it was a great run through the event. Mike Stone winning the whole event, similar to what happened with Donnie and losing in round 2. It's the same thing that happened to me. I was able to win out the rest of the day and follow Mike up to the podium. The only difference with Donnie and I was all of my opponents through the event happened to also get a winning record. So I actually leapfrogged into 2nd after losing in round 2. Because the worst record my opponents had was 3-2. So even though I was 4 rounds away from the finals, I jumped to 2nd at the end of the event. So Mike took 1st qualifying for Warfare Weekend. I was able to land in 2nd. And then with the current updates to the wild card slots, there's a handful of people that aren't able to go that did qualify. They are allowing in more wild cards. While there are still more events between now and Warfare Weekend, so I might not stay in 2nd. I'm currently in 2nd for points. I'd have to get jumped by 5 other people on the list. Four other people on the list to not make it, so I'm in the wildcard event, or in as a wildcard. So Mike Stone through winning the event, and then my taking 2nd to get points puts us both as a qualifying to Warfare Weekend. And then right on my heels is Danny, who couldn't make the solo event, but also likely to get in as a wild card. Still have to see what happens in this next month, but all likely to make it into the Invitational, which is
on the current update. Danny's ahead of you.
What?
No, Brad's ahead.
I just looked last night after he updated it.
Okay, that's fine.
The point is, there's going to be some nice Molly Whopper representation, it sounds like. That's good. I'm excited.
Likely 3, there'd have to be some wacky stuff for either Danny and I not to make it enough wildcard points.
As an honorary Molly Whopper.
You do have a Danny jersey, so.
I do have a Danny jersey.
And you are Brad Park.
I am currently Brad Park.
Speaking of jerseys, Matt, how many jerseys did you walk away from WTC?
9.
That's insane.
So my first year WTC, back to the original conversation, my first year WTC, I only brought 4 jerseys, and I regretted it immensely because I had to set up so many jersey trades for the next year. And then this year, Tomash Muha was kind enough to just give me a jersey in my size. So I gave him one of my jerseys in roughly 3 times his size. He looked like an ex-girlfriend wearing my shirt. It was hot. And then I just traded for like Wales. I got a Cole Westbrook jersey, and that's hot.
Those are hot.
Yep. I got a lot of jerseys. It was a good time, man. Jersey trading is one of my favorite things. Specifically, I now own a pile of Andreas Home jerseys. I think I own 4. And 1 that we don't speak about. And then, jersey trading is the shit. So my trip to Booker Brawl, I got back from Belgium on Monday, contracted the death plague on Tuesday, rested Wednesday, Thursday was like, oh god, I have to pack all my models for Boker Brawl. Friday morning, go and start the 8-hour drive down to the event. So by the time I got in on Friday, I had no voice left. I was just like, I sounded like an 80-year-old woman who smokes 4 packs of cigarettes a day. And it was bad. It was the entire event. I had, like, my opponents couldn't hear what I was saying because I couldn't speak because it hurt so bad.
It's rough. So I don't want to go over all my games. I'm not even going to round around. I just want to talk about one game in specific from the individual event before we go into the team event. Round one, I played Ryan Babcock, also a Maryland native and Molly Lopper from down south. We play Scar 1 versus Xerxes 2 with a Hydra and triple bugs. So it's all the spray things against 8 stalkers. And he gets to go first. So it's this weird dance of where do I get to put things so my whole army doesn't melt on top of 2. On my bottom of 2, I get in like Garlock and a Raider Captain, a Warwick Sire and a Stalker. Just a handful of stuff. That are all feeded on my Scar 1 to attack his Hydra. After we were able to kill the Agonizer first, which was important. I feel pretty good about killing it. I do the real quick math in my head, and I have, assuming that I hit all my Dark Guidance attacks, because I need triple ones to miss them, I do a pile of damage, and I should be fine. By a good amount over. So I go in with all this stuff, and I miss a charge attack with the defeated Raider Captain rolling 3 ones. Garlock rolls his boosted, his 4-dice charge, and rolls like a 4-dice 9. I'm like, this is... Eesh, okay. Math here is not working out. So at the end of all this, we leave him on 3. Similar to what happened with Mike Stone, Scar is kind of like, she's feeded on, but she's kind of like 6 inches in front of the Hydra, because he threw it down the center of the table. So I'm panicking. I have some Dirtseers go to the list, and they start hexbolting him, and I get a lucky damage roll bringing him down to 1 health. I was like, all right, that's better, but still not great. The only model I still have like left in the list to go is a Warwick Siren. I'm like, all right, we're going to go over and Venom Spray. We don't kill him with the spray needing a 10. I'm like, well, this whole game's banked on a continuous corrosion roll. And I am very lucky that he rolled, I think, a 4, so I killed a Desert Hydra with Continuous Corrosion, which I'm very proud of.
That's not even close to killing Michael Ireland's Alara 2 on stream with a Corrosion roll, all right?
Well, it made me feel good, Matt. I don't know what to tell you.
By the way, if Michael Ireland ever asks if you're in his back arc, just say yes, you know you are.
That, I mean, correct. I've also seen him kill a Siege and a Mantrax with Siphon in melee with 2 focus.
Was that the Hobbits? Siege and a Mantrax?
Yeah, that was the Alcohol Gremlins.
Yeah.
So after all the solo events wrap up, it's on to the team event, which now Matt and the rest of Quebec is here for, and the Trace Molly Whopper teams. There's a full 20 teams, there's 100 players. The event has only grown each year, so I'm hard selling it right now, because if you haven't gone, you really should consider it. I think the date's already out for next year. But I'm going to look that up, boys. But how was...
October 20-something.
It's like the 23rd or something like that.
Yeah, I'll take a quick looky-loo, but how was the team event for you, boys?
So, my team, Something French, composed of 4 of my locals. We did the 8-hour drive down together, and on the drive down, all my dudes were like, yeah, so we haven't played in a couple weeks, because, you know, I was out of town, so apparently no one plays War Machine when I'm not around. And, they're like, yes, we're all super rusty. And I'm like, well, this is gonna be fucking great. So, during the drive down, I made sure to tell everyone, like, look, I don't care how you do personally, I don't care if you go 0-5, I don't care if you go 5-0. All I want from you is to walk away from each game and tell me something you learned during the game. That's what's important to me. I want you to have fun and I want you to learn. Because winning overall in War Machine doesn't actually fucking matter in any way. It doesn't make your dick bigger, right? So, like, Like, it feels good and all that stuff, but it's a dice game we play, and you're going to lose games you should have won and win games you should have lost. So, yeah. Anyways, we go to this event, and we have five really nice, really fun, really friendly games, rounds. I played five sweet dudes. I played Agathon every round, and I just assassinated the fuck out of people. It was a really good event. I had a lot of fun. My boys had a lot of fun. And, yeah, I think we had a game came down to one of my guys killed Oma Deimos with a corrosion roll.
Seems to be a pattern.
Yeah, I think it was against Iron City in the semifinals. Oma Deimos on one box after a bunch of Weapon Master charges. Corroded from, like, Gorman's corrosion bomb or something. I don't know from what. And, flips the clock over, rolls a five, immediately dies to corrosion, and that won us the round. If he had survived, we would have lost the game, or lost the round. My games were super cool. I played round one. I'm not going to remember anyone's name, and I'm not going to remember a lot of the things, but round one I played against a Thyra player, and before the game, we sit down, he goes, "Where'd you get the jersey from?" And I go, "WTC. It's Cole Westbrook's jersey." And he goes, "Oh, are you a famous player?" And I'm like, "Not really. I'm just like some fucking, I just go to WC. It's like, whatever." And he's like, "I Googled you. You're famous." I'm like, "Oh, God. This is fucking, why you gotta be so awkward?"
So on a real quick, Donnie will...
Wait. Did he Google you or did he Google Cole Westbrook?
I'm assuming me. He said, "You're Matt McMatt, right?"
Oh, okay.
So... On an aside, there was one event in Philly that Donnie and a handful of guys came up for where we go out to dinner, and Donnie's wearing his Molly Whopper jersey that we wear into ATC, and there's these two guys at a table in the dining room as well that I can see them on their phone, kind of like typing in Molly Whoppers and typing in Donnie's last name and all this, and they actually find the conflict chamber list for our list from ATC. So I can see that on their phone, because I keep looking up and back at the phone. So Donnie's also famous, and there's people looking him up. But they weren't even War Machine players, Matt. What do you can say about that?
I mean, Donnie's more famous than me, that's for sure.
Donnie who?
Yeah, Donnie who? So, anyways, I play this game, and it's super fun, super friendly game. I bottom up to Thyra with Agathon's assassination run. And it was fun. And then the next round, I played against a soup dude. This was probably the friendliest game of War Machine I've ever played. I played the dudes from, I think it's Long Island?
Do you remember the team name? I think there was two. Was it Distinguished Vagabonds?
No, I think it was 50% Wetter Willies.
Oh, yeah. Derek Apshin Company.
Yeah, I played against their Kador player. And this was probably the friendliest, most enjoyable game of War Machine I played in a long time. And, like, that says a lot coming out of WTC, right? Like it was, like, the whole time we're, like, talking about the game, what could happen, like, and, like, just being, like, super generous with each other and, like, measuring things, pausing the clock, talking about things. It was a really fun game. I ended up winning the game by Crow hunting down Karchev in his back arc the whole game.
Oh, and just silencing him?
Yeah, for, like, three turns.
That Scarts are fatty, real sweet dude.
Yeah, it was a genuinely good game. I who did we play round three, Brad?
Who'd you? I don't know.
I don't. After Karchev, I played against the Choo Choo Train, whatever.
Oh, the King of Trains and the Choo Choo Crew.
Yeah, I played against Dan Raven.
More Kador. You're just finding all of them.
Yeah, so just a little, like, I had played a total of three Agathon games before Boker Brawl, and, like, they were all early on in testing. Hey, Donnie, can you stop Darth Vadering? Thanks. I'd played a total of three Agathon games before the event, and it was... I played against Doom Reavers, Light 2 Doom Reavers. You know, they're all spell warded, which is really awkward when you're playing a caster that's all about casting spells on enemy models. I ended up winning the game. I basically only summoned once during the game and just hellmouthed like Cav models to kill nearby Doom Reavers and stuff. It was a really fun game. Round four, I played against Lawrence Paladin, the child.
Yeah, yeah. Little Larry.
He played Kalos One. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he played Kalos One into me. And he came in with some hot shit talk right out of the gates.
Yeah, that kid's great.
And I was like, wow. So we sit down at the table, and like we're about to play, and he's like, well, JVM beat you in this matchup. And I'm like, whoa.
He's just trying to say you ain't shit, Matt, and he knows it.
I'm like, whoa, first of all, that's not accurate. Second of all, he beat me in the other matchup. But the point ends up being that he came in with that, and I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to try hard this game then. And it was fucking savage. Did you know Dark Seduction is really good into Kalos 1?
Yes, I did. I played an aggro one in that matchup before.
Yeah, so I Dark Seductioned two Chosen that he was using to counterpunch back into his deployment zone and then killed a Mach. The other cool play, so if you guys don't know Agathon at all, really cool play here. He has an ability called Revelation of Outer Darkness, or Outer Realms, whatever the fuck it's called. Revelation. And it's when a friendly faction non-soulless warrior model is destroyed by an enemy attack, you can cast one of your spells once per turn. So I had set up this whole contesting trap where I had a heavy just outside the zone, a single cultist contesting the zone, and then like the only place he could contest because of my Desolator AoE 4 was on the edge of my zone. So he brings all his birds into charge, kills the cultist, I hellmouth the bird, killing all of his contesting models and pulling my heavy to contest the zone. So instead of scoring 2 points above me, he scores only 1 point above me because I score my zone and contest. Agathon's fucking sweet. And then round five, I played against Michael Stone's team and with the Molly Whopper team of Molly Whopperness. I don't know. And, I played against, Christopher Taylor. He played Sevi 2 into me, knowing that we both knew it was a, Infernals drop. I went for like a 1% assassination on Sevi 2. With a boosted Science Importance Hellmouth, left him on two boxes, and then on the following turn was able to finish it off because of he dropped his Arcane Ward on Sevi and then forgot to put it back up, so I just killed him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good game. Super, super sweet dude. Really friendly game. Again, another one of those games where I was, like, super enjoying it the entire time. I was, like, dead on my feet that entire point, but, like, that dude was super sweet. One of the friendliest players I played against and, like, really aware of what was happening and, like, being like, yeah, like, this is how this works. This is how this works. Yeah. It was good. It was very good.
So, Chris is sweet, but if he remembers to cast a spell, how is he looking that game?
Well, considering I would have killed his Judicator and all of his Archons that turn. Not good.
Rough. All right, got it. Just lessons learned still.
Yeah, so the thing ends up being is Agathon with his Science Important spells, Desolator Spray and the Hermit minus 2 armor, just like scythes through Archons, right?
Did
like,
his feat take out all your Marked Souls?
No, because I played all my Marked Souls in my deployment zone. So Sevi is speed 5 and has a 16-inch control. So I measured 21 from Sevi every turn and put all my Marked Souls there.
Exactly at 21. That's a strong choice.
That's fairly
neat. So I put all my Marked Souls there and was like, you can feed on Crow's Cutthroats, I guess. And then on turn 2, he opted to take that to kill Orin and a cultist and some crows, which meant from that point I could just like, I mean, the game ended, but like from that point I could have played my souls forward. For those of you who are playing against Archons and are tilted or like bothered by them and like don't know how to deal with them, I find that just having a few boostable guns or like maybe a caster that can hurl some good spells is usually enough to remove them. They're durable, but not unkillable. So as long as you have a way to like focus remove half a heavy, you can kill an Archon.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So sweet little nice recap there, your five rounds. Mike Stone, how was your day?
It was good. So round one, we see the pairings, and it's, of course, one of the Molly Whopper teams. It's not Brad's
It's Testakill.
Yeah, it's like Ryan Babcock and Chris Gunther's team. So we get over, and we're like, well, I guess we got to play this now. We do pairings, and I get Brandon Andrews.
Good old,
the Brandon Andrews.
Good old Andrew Brandow.
Yeah.
Andrew Brandow. Andrew Andrew.
So he's playing the Sweet Infernals pair of Fiora 3 and Lucas. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I haven't played into either of these casters, like, ever. So, like, drop whatever. So I dropped Kruger out of comfort, and because he's got, like, lots of guns and Grievers, so I'm like, Windstorm's good. And he drops Lucas. I make a big dumb and let him kill.
Mike, I think you muted yourself there by accident. Let him kill.
Sound like a painful memory.
I hit the wrong button. No, I'm sorry. I hit the wrong button. He kills Megalith and Wold Warden, because I just lined them up perfectly for his Vulcan. But then he returns a big dumb error as well, because maybe he felt bad for me. He puts a suppressor right next to his Vulcan, and between the Wold Weirds, a well, mannequins, Hermits minus two, and a Wold Warden, I kill a suppressor and his Vulcan. So now he has two lights on the board, and basically from there I have the attrition lead and just score out on scenario. But it was a really sweet game, and I respect that Lucas list a lot more now after seeing it on the board. Really sweet list. We win the round 4-1, I believe. Round two, we then get Brad's team. We lose the roll. Spoiler alert, we lose the roll every round except against Matt's team. And you guys pick tables?
We take tables, 100%.
Yeah.
Hundy P.
Hundy P. So I get to play against Brad again.
Hello.
Brad, let's revisit that. What's your record against me and Michael now?
That current time it was 1-7 for myself.
That was a good surprise. I was like, oh, I guess this is a matchup for me. So we play it out. Brad plays it very well.
Kicking his fucking ass is what he meant to say.
Yeah. He's got this huge scenario lead, and attrition lead. Scar's sitting in a row on the flag in Anarchy while also in Rubble. And he basically leaves me up with one out, and it's to kill Scar. I have my Storm Raptor, and I have, like, some angles that require, like, a bunch of deep digging to get, like, a Hunter's Mark onto Scar, but also requires clearing a bunch of models, and that doesn't end up happening. So it comes down to a Skyfired Storm Raptor shooting Scar, which, like, just running the numbers, I was like, okay, I feel good if I hit the first shot, and I proceed to miss the first boosted 12. So now I have to hit the second shot, or basically this assassination's gone. I hit the second boosted 12. He tells me I need a boosted 12 to kill. I walk over to Gibbs to blow on my dice because I have like 8 minutes just to like roll these dice. So I'm like, sure, why not? Gibbs proceeds to roll on my blow on my dice, and then I walk over and roll exactly a 12 to kill Scar to the box through focus.
It was great.
It was.
Did you learn a valuable lesson, Brad?
Yeah, why did I put it there?
But, yep, why did you put it there?
So we lost that round 3-2, so that boosted 12, while not definitively the game that won you the round, also won you the round.
I mean, so boosted 12s are average.
No, they're not.
Against you, Brad.
Sure.
I will interject a little bit on this one, in that the reports of this game came as I was hiking up the stairs of the Eiffel Tower in Paris. And it's first of all, my wife, bless her heart, decided to buy tickets to the Eiffel Tower. There's two ways you can go up the Eiffel Tower in Paris. You can take the lift, which is like, you know, 50 euros or something like that. Or you can pay like, you know, 10 euros and take the stairs. And so, you know, I'm not the smallest kid in the world. I'm a pretty big boy. So my wife decided that we were all going to take the stairs and save some money. So, like, I'm actually climbing the stairs, looking at my phone as the game reports are coming in for this match. And I'm just like, this is not making me happy. What's going on here? Just the history of the Molly Whoppers, it's one of we've had these matchups a couple of times and in different events. And this is the only time I was upset that I was still in Europe when the Boca Brawl was going on. But anyways, continue on.
Yeah, so no, I ate some boosted 12s and Scar got put in the dirt, so that was rough. If he didn't kill Scar, I actually went on Scenario on his turn, scoring 3, to let you know how crushing of a table state Mike Stone was in.
I was in control the whole time.
Okay, sure.
I calculated those boosted 12s.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing now is 1-9. That's what I'm hearing, right?
That's 1-8.
Oh, I'm sorry. Eight. I was thinking of the next tournament. Okay.
It'll be the next one. Correct, yeah.
So that was a sweet nail-biter of a round as we hit two of the teams that we were not hoping to hit for the early rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Round 3, we get Team Meat, which is the Marvelous Mark Howard, Mike Ireland, and Cat number one rep player, Warrior. Right. I get to play Kevin Strong, who is one of Brad's locals. He's super excited to play the game. And then we sit down, he looks at my sheet, and he's like, oh, you played Brad last round. And I was like, yeah. He's like, this always happens to me.
He's, for the record, playing my lists. He's also a Crix player.
playing Brad's exact Scar 1 list. So I go into it with like a bajillion reps from playing Brad. And he plays a bit too hesitant, and I just basically take advantage of it and run away with Scenario, as it's a very, like, board pressure game. And we end up taking that round 4-1, 4-1, with a very close game between Mark Mail and Mike Ireland, coming down to, I believe, army points destroyed.
It's a tight game.
Yeah. Combined, like, 8 seconds. It was sweet watching. But so that was the end of that day. So then we kind of just chill out, go get food, hang out, play games, all that jazz. And then the next day we get the pair down into Distinguished Vagabonds, and I play Brian Williams, who's playing Striker 2 and Haley 2.
Mm-hmm.
He drops Striker 2, I drop Kruger 2, because he's got like millions of Electro Leaps, so I'm like, okay, this seems like the right drop. I'm positioning to basically take advantage of the scenario, and he does something that I didn't quite expect him to do, where he just basically feats and tries to jam me out. So basically, I spend the next like 3 turns fighting on my own zone on Spread the Net, eventually forcing him to take a risky attrition play, which ends up failing. And then I just shoot down Striker 2, who's standing in front of many of my models. We take that round 4-1 as well, and then we get to play Matt McMahon and the Canadians.
Good old something French.
The French Canadians.
The wannabe Frenchman.
We had a natural Frenchman on our team.
You did. How many Canadian Frenchmen does it take to equal one Frenchman?
All of Quebec.
I mean, okay. Considering that. Everyone, oh, never mind. No.
Okay. good input. Thanks, Matt.
I was coming in too hot. Had to pull out.
Hold on, Grant. Here we go. That's for later.
All right, great. I love Julian. He's great. So for those that don't know, Julian was the captain of Team France 1, and he lives in Jersey now. And
the best state.
I don't speak any French at all, really, and he speaks French because he's French. And so all we do when we see each other is I basically scream the French I've picked up from living in Montreal at him, and then he repeats it back to me, and then screams something else at me, and we just take turns doing that.
It's like Hooked on Phonics when the teacher's angry at you the entire time.
It's pretty fucking funny.
Who'd you get on the something-something French team, Mr. Stone?
Matt, please correct me if I pronounce the name wrong. Locke?
Luick.
Luick, okay.
Is that what that spells?
I mean, that wasn't even close, Michael.
You can call him Lulu if you want. That's what we all call him.
Sure. So we end up playing Fiona into Iona on Recon 2. Thankfully, we finally won a roll and got to choose tables. So I have this sweet table with like two forests, one in each of the like center of the zones. So I'm feeling real good on either table side I get. He wins the roll, decides to go second, chooses a side that has a nice hiding spot for Fiona. I get a good attrition turn where I basically take out two heavies and score three on my top of three, going up 3-1, and we kind of play the game from there. His feat allows him to take a board position after my feat that makes it hard for me to take too much advantage of the scenario lead I got. Then I basically just clear my flag and contest his scoring elements. And I position all of my Ravagers outside of 9 of his last Toro, because I'm like, okay, Befuddle countercharge, I'm safe here. I pass clock. He immediately goes, walks up his Ironhead, and cranes his Toro. And I'm just thinking to myself, sweet, I've just lost this game. Because my Storm Raptor is basically just dominating my right zone. With the only way of getting to it was a Befuddle countercharge that I thought I measured out. So he does that, gets to the Storm Raptor. After a Toro and some other activations due to the Toro missing two or three of its attacks, he takes out the Storm Raptor. Hermit then walks up, minus two armors, this Toro. I clear out the Toro contesting my flag and all the other models and start doing work on his left zone, eventually getting to a board state where Iona's standing in the left zone on Recon 2, and I have a line of Ravagers body blocking my flag. Coming down to my end of top of 7, where I score out 3 points going 11-6 with a combined 50 seconds left. And we take that round 4-1, I believe, Matt?
Yeah, that's correct. So I think all of the games that round, except for maybe Al's game into Gibbs, were like remarkably close. I know that Andy versus Jeremy ended like super close, came down to like second tie breaks, I think, or something.
That sounds right.
And then my game was just, you know, one mistake and I win the game. And then your game was really super close. Yeah, man, it was a good round. I know JMS clocked out that round too. He said if he had maybe like 30 more seconds, he could have closed the game out, but he just didn't have enough time to clear out the zone before he lost.
So, I mean, in similar fashion to the solo event, I know I individually lost to Mike Stone, but our team lost in the second round 2-3 to their team. Very similar fashion. We then were able to play the remainder of the event, ending up 4-1. Following them to the podium, and our team took third. So at least personally, I had a very similar track record, both the solo events and the team event, where we lost round two and then kind of won out the rest of the event and followed the winning team to the podium. I'm happy to run through my gains. We're already pretty far in. I think the kind of most spectacular game was the one with Mike Stone, where runner 12s and mount the door. All the rounds were sweet. I don't remember any games ever getting contentious to Matt's points. It's a solid room full of people that are all there to have a good time. Some people had too good of a time on Saturday night. The parties were little nuts. But I had a great time. I'm only looking forward to this event expanding. I looked it up while we were talking. The dates are confirmed for next year of October 23rd through the 25th. It will again be up in North Jersey. While nothing is, of course, guaranteed, it is very likely going to be a Warfare Weekend qualifier, and then they'll also be hosting the five-man team event, kind of the thing they're known for more than the qualifying event, but both events are astounding. Without being able to make any assurances, I am very likely to be there again next year. I'm hoping that Matt can come down again. I'm hoping that Donnie won't be in Europe touring the Eiffel Tower, and that we can steal the crown back from Mike Stone and the rest of the gang of goons.
My goal is to hopefully bring two teams next year. Maybe bring my WTC team with me next year.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Yeah.
Matt, Donnie.
Yeah, so it's not gonna. So Boker next year is not going to be like the week after WTC, is that correct?
No, they should be separated by about 3 to 4 weeks. I forgot the date of WTC. I know that's announced as well, but Boker Brawl is October 23rd through the 25th.
Is the date announced?
For Boker Brawl, yes.
No, for WTC?
I thought it was. I thought Norbert said when it was. Let me go see if I can find it.
I am not... There's a reason I'm not the captain of the teams. I am not an organized human being.
I don't see where he... hold on. No. Yeah, there it is. October 3rd through the 4th, it'll be in Warsaw. So, what is that? That's 3 weeks apart.
Kind of.
Well, including travel, like 2.5. But the dates for WTC in 2020 are announced of October 3rd and 4th in Warsaw.
Hype!
Any closing thoughts, boys, or want to bring this to a close?
I got a quick closing thought for. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's more of an interview question for Mr. Baby Michael Stone, and his qualification for the Warfare Weekend. I know he's been talking about playing some Baldur 1, and every time I listen to him, he's having success with Iona. And I don't think that's a 1-to-1 swap, right? Like, if you're either playing Iona or you're playing Baldur 1. You're not playing them as a pair, obviously. So I want to know where his thoughts are on that and what he thinks he'll be more successful with ultimately.
So I think I'm leaning more towards what I'm practiced with Iona. Due to Baldur 1 may be the better choice in the meta right now, but I'm feeling that I could use the reps I have to play matchups that may not be as good for Iona, but just kind of shovel my games out due to just the experience I have with her.
So I gotta let the audience know here. There might have been a father-son conversation last night at the game store after I played Baby Michael in a practice game. I think that's a good conclusion that he's coming to.
Good job, Dad.
Thanks, Dad.
So on that note, real fast, you should always play what you're comfortable with. Play what excites you first, play what you're comfortable with second. Choosing a list that you're unpracticed with because in theory it has better matchups is the best way to lose matchups you think you should win.
That's fair, yeah. That's kind of what I've came to realization of. Yep. But on the note of Boker Brawl, I have to agree with Brad that it is a wonderful event with lovely players and honestly one of my favorite run events due to how it's scheduled and the Seth and crew providing lunch and providing breaks in between rounds. It's very, very like relaxed environment, which is sweet, and some of the best prize support that I've seen at an event.
Yeah, so I really like the event as well. I mean, It's really well run overall. It's a good event. I will be continuing to go as long as I can get a team together. It's good.
All right, boys. I've got nothing else, so I want to thank everyone for listening, and hopefully we'll see a Boca Brawl next year, and talk to you guys again sometime real soon. Thanks again.
I'm Brad.
I'm not Brad.
I might be Brad.
Good night.